In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The default starting position of every patriot should be to love your country, but to distrust your government, until it proves itself trustworthy. And proving itself to be trustworthy is an ongoing, everyday effort on the government's part. It's not just people mindlessly loyal to the government. It's not a one-way street. The government must prove itself loyal and worthy of trust to the people. This is especially so for an American form of government, since it derives its just powers and authority from the people. If Christians don't fill the moral vacuum within society, guess who will? And before long, your kids have been convinced they're in the wrong body. And if they can be convinced of a physical falsehood, just imagine what spiritual and moral falsehoods they can be convinced of. Today, it's about activating the church and getting Christians involved in a battlefield they may not want to go on, but need to. A quick programming note before we get going. This being Memorial Day weekend, we will be re-airing this show next week as well. It's an incredibly important topic, and we want to get it in front of as many listeners as possible. Oh, and be sure to stick around through the very end. After the show, you'll definitely want to hear my closing remarks, or at least I hope you do. Pastor Richard Peel is joining us now. He is a pastor at the Victory Baptist Church in Bend, Oregon, and was recently joined by some 24 other pastors at the Capitol in Salem to protest the horrible bill, HB 2002. Pastor Peel, thanks for being here.
And Mark, thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a bit about yourself. How did you end up in the ministry?
Well, that's a lengthy story. To try to cut to it. I was with the U.S. Navy stationed in San Diego, and entered into a relationship with God that had never been there in my life as a young married father of one. And pretty quickly after all of that, just began to have a great burden for ministry. I left the military after 10 years and settled in San Diego for about 5 or 6 years. And then in 2002, I actually relocated from San Diego to Bend and started Victory Baptist Church here in our city.
So some pastors get involved in the community and become kind of activists within the community and larger society. Other pastors seem to want to just kind of keep things in the church and keep the church to itself. Before you personally got involved in the ministry, how did you perceive the role of the church in society? Where did you fall on that spectrum?
Boy, on that spectrum, I suppose that there was a recognition of the importance of encouraging people to vote biblical values, and I would promote that. But it wasn't something I was taught in my preparation for ministry, going through my formal schooling and so forth. It was more something that came upon me out of necessity to be more actively involved. Beyond just encouraging congregants to vote biblical values and biblical truth based on candidates' positions, that was about the extent of my political involvement.
So in terms of the political involvement, I know COVID certainly probably got you fired up and involved, but were you politically active before COVID, or talk to us about that journey?
Yeah, not terribly so. It was COVID that really began to wake me up, and I was actually in Southern California performing a wedding when all the mandates in Oregon began to come down, and you know, I got home and really sat down and with this governor's order on my desk that essentially said that the church couldn't meet in its normal way, that we had to limit our size to 25 people and these different things. And that's where I guess things really picked up for me. Was I turned to the Bible. I sequestered myself in my office for a week, and I just said, I'm going to approach this as if I were, to use a Bible term, a novice. And I'm going to study the scriptures about what the Bible says the church is, its function is, how it relates to the government to it. And we made some pretty solid decisions based upon that four or five days of pretty intense study and prayer. And I suppose that from then it was really the turning point to help me get more involved in government affairs, politics, etc.
So you got those orders from the governor. Were they just guidance and suggestions, or were they orders, and did they threaten you with anything if you didn't obey?
Well, initially, I think across our state, we, for the majority part, looked at them as being guidelines and suggestions coming from the governor. But throughout that order, the very first one and the subsequent ones, there was always just kind of this underlying, not directly communicated threat. And, you know, certainly I saw other businesses, as we moved a few months into things, being fined and threatened and shut down, and all across our state and our city. So there was always that threat. I tried to, and I initially reached out to my local sheriff to see what his position was. He assured me through email that the sheriff's department's role would be to educate, not enforce, recognizing that they were governor's orders, but they're not laws, and the governor doesn't write laws. You know, she has an executive branch that she oversees. So, and we worked with our local police department as well. Thankfully, throughout the whole thing, we never closed our church down. We never stopped having in-person services, like I think everybody else in our town did. And we didn't have any issues with law enforcement. We were a bit concerned at times about how folks in the community may view all of that. And so it was a difficult 12 months to get through.
Mm. Yeah, well, and in a lot of ways, we got it off easy here in the U.S. You look at places like Canada, where pastors were literally dragged out of their own churches and sent to jail for daring to defy the orders of the government. Okay, time for a break. In case you didn't notice it, there's a war on for your soul, of course, and for America. But what's the role of the church when it comes to government? Should there be one? That's next. Today's show is about activating the church, and right now, in my opinion, everything happening in America is not just a battle between left and right, it is a spiritual war. And to win a war, you need soldiers on the field, so when it comes to spiritual wars, who better than Christians? And we're talking with Pastor Richard Peel, who leads Victory Baptist Church in Bend, and who is trying to wake up other pastors to get involved as well. So let's maybe set a little bit of a historical tone here. When you look back at the early church, and you read through the Bible, of course, you know, you got Paul and Peter writing there. How did the early church perceive themselves when it came to government and the proper role of the church within society when it comes to the government?
Well, I think to even get a fuller view of that, Mark, it's almost necessary to go to the Old Testament, where you begin to see God's prophets, men like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, confronting kings directly to their face and calling out their wickedness. And as we do move into the New Testament era, you have John the Baptist on the scene, who's beheaded for telling, Herod that he can't have his brother's wife as his wife.
Mm-hmm.
There was always this historical perspective that these men of God, quote unquote, these clergy, if you will, bore a responsibility on God's behalf to communicate God's law to those that were bearing governmental power. And I think you see that after the birth of the church, after the resurrection and ascension of Jesus Christ. The apostles themselves there in Jerusalem, the world headquarters of all things spiritual at that time, being told by the ruling council of Jews, the Sanhedrin, made up primarily of Sadducees, but some Pharisees and scribes as well, you know, being commanded through this religious political motive to cease their teachings in the name of Jesus Christ. And the end of that was the apostles unashamedly, and I don't believe arrogantly or pridefully, just said, you know, you men will have to choose if it's better to obey God or man, but we must teach and preach the things that we have seen and heard. And so there is a biblical precedence from the immediate followers, the men who walked and talked and slept and dined with Jesus, who would have certainly learned from him how to engage with government leaders, political figures, who were either, I would approach it this way, if any government agent forbids the church or the Christian to do what God commands, or commands the church or Christian to do what God forbids, we are under no biblical expectation of obeying such command. And so when you deal with these different things that's going on, the church should be speaking out and really reminding the government of the limits of its power.
That's right. Yeah. And in so many ways, government reflects the authority within the church itself, that there should be order rather than chaos. And so that there's this natural process. And so many of our own governmental laws really reflect some of the morals and ethics within God's kingdom anyway. You shouldn't be out there killing people. You shouldn't be out there stealing and so forth. But, you know, from the early church, you had an evolution really within the church and the interaction between the church and government, because fast forward several hundred years and you get into the medieval church, and they had been under the authority of Rome and then eventually became Rome. They were the authority, because you would have a situation where effectively the government and kings and whatnot did not have legitimacy unless they had the blessing or at least the acquiescence of the church.
Correct.
And of course, you have the church, you know, the Catholic Church. You had the Church of England, but then you had the settlement of America, and the church was heavily involved with the early colonization. You had the Pilgrims, the Quakers, the Baptists. These were all persecuted and prosecuted in some cases for going against the official church. But then also in the early colonial days, you had huge revivals. And I would argue that without that spiritual Christian foundation, an active one, America simply wouldn't exist. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree with that estimation of America's birth. Had there not been, and mind you, the men who were the tip of the spear, so to speak, these preachers, that they were English. They'd come from England to the colonies to evangelize. And the result was this great awakening, this great spiritual reviving of the colonists. They realized, as their eyes were opened to biblical truth, that they were living under tyranny. And somewhere they came to that point of understanding that they had a responsibility to refuse to place themselves under tyranny, that they had to hazard their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the duty of resisting tyranny. I think it was Benjamin Franklin was pushing for the official state of Virginia, the colony of Virginia seal, to simply say disobedience to tyranny is obedience to God, or something along those lines. Maybe it was resistance to tyranny is obedience to God, which I would still believe.
Hmm. So as far as the founders were concerned, you mentioned Ben Franklin there, and a lot of these, actually Ben Franklin himself is sometimes seen as kind of anti-Christian because he led not the most pure life, so to speak.
Right.
But he also very much saw the role of the church in the founding of America and realized that they were really the moral compass for so much of what later became America in terms of what we saw that evolved into the Declaration of Independence and later into the Constitution. And all of the founders saw really the church as setting the moral tone and leading the way on ethics and the rest as really the cornerstone for so much of that. So now fast forward, and we've got, I should say that the founders also saw that it wasn't the place of government to enforce morality. That was always the purview of the church. But now fast forward, and we've got essentially the government enforcing a secular morality. And you were there, as I mentioned earlier, that you were there protesting HB 2002. That's a perfect example where the state has decided what's moral and what isn't, and now they're trying to force that on people, including the church.
Yeah, absolutely. And sadly, in America today, the measuring rod of morality for that segment of our culture is not God and His Word. It's almost love that in their mind is this inclusive nature of love, and there's such a spin on the use of words, even inside the church today. For example, you know, to love is to be godly, or love is God, but the Bible doesn't decree that or declare that anywhere. It just says that God is love. In other words, we can't know love unless we know God. And if we make love the measuring rod of who God is, well, that's just man's affection. And that's just making man essentially his own God.
Right.
And man the decider of what's moral and immoral. And, you know, the Bible speaks about this coming day in which men will call that which is good in the eyes of God evil, and that which is evil in the eyes of God good. And sadly, we see that making great advances all across the culture of America today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it is time for a break. Somehow we went from the founders seeing the church as having a pivotal role within society to where we are today. How did that happen? We'll talk about that more next. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the church and whether or not it should be involved in politics. It should. And we're doing that with Pastor Richard Peel. He's out of Bend. The church is Victory Baptist, if you happen to be in the Bend area. So, Pastor, it's not just about sharing the gospel that is the role of the church and individual Christians, but living a life that brings others to Christ. The church should be the spiritual leaders of America, and that means leading on ethics and morality. But the church, the present day anyway, has really, in some ways, abdicated that when it comes to having a larger role within society. How did that happen, do you think? Because, you know, the church was very active in the 50s and even into the 60s and 70s. I remember a big revival back in the 70s, the I Believe campaign with Franklin Graham. So did something happen to derail that where the church suddenly pulled itself back?
Yes, I think that you see that creeping on slowly from really the 50s forward to where we are today. And in my research studies, readings as to the source of this, you know, you're always looking for that foundational pivotal moment. And I think really it goes back to the beginning of the creation where you begin to see man wanting to essentially in some way take the place of God as far as the right to rule over others. And I would say in a modern sort of sense that that ideology, you know, with time we began to name these ideologies. Today we would think of socialism or Marxism or communism. And I think it, in my studies that there was a very concerted effort of communist entities to purposely infiltrate the church in order to ultimately bring America into some form of communist dictatorship in the hopes of without having to go to do so through violent war whereby you're destroying all the infrastructure of the world's wealthiest nation. And so, you know, some people have a hard time understanding that or allowing their minds to believe that there's some communist attempt to overthrow America, but I see it plain as day just about anywhere I look. But for example, in 1963, on January the 10th, read into the official record of the U.S. House of Representatives were a summary of 45 goals of the communists. And you got to go back again, you know, 58 years ago in American history, reading this into the official record. You can look it up on the internet and find it. It's official congressional record. A34-A35, dated January 10, 1963, where these 45 blatant goals of the Communist Party were being delineated before the Congress. One of those was to capture one or both of the political parties in the United States.
Yeah.
Another was to use student riots to foment public protests against programs or organizations which are under communist attack. Infiltrate the press was one. Get control of book review assignments, editorial writings, policy making decisions. Here's one. The 26th one was to present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. But ultimately, one of those was to infiltrate the churches, and I'm reading quotes here from that record, infiltrating the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion, discredit the Bible, and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. So these were communist goals. And I think today, of 1963, and if they've been working these goals for 58 years with some success, then where does that leave the church today if they've succeeded at infiltrating the seminaries? And when I think a casual observer really steps back and listens to a lot of the things that are coming out of pulpits today, even the televangelists, you listen carefully, it's a woke agenda. It is the ideology of Karl Marx in some way, where there is an oppressed class and an oppressor class. And the gospel, the message of Jesus, was to liberate the oppressed from the oppressor. Well, all of this is just Marxist and communist ideology. It has thoroughly infiltrated, I would say, in my estimation, the vast majority of all evangelical seminaries across our country. And now you have, Jesus warned us of sheep, wolves in sheep's clothing. Today in America, we have wolves in shepherd's clothing. In the pulpits across America, we have essentially, whether they are allegiant to a party or not is not the issue. They've been trained to be allegiant to a Marxist, communist, socialist type of ideology. And what really makes it so much more forceful is they use the Bible to support it.
Right.
And so it comes with this divine authority that this is God's way, when in fact it's totally contrary to the teachings of Jesus Christ.
Yes, they excel at pulling out little verses from here and there, taking that out of context, and trying to twist the meaning and intention of those. What you're saying about seminaries being infiltrated by Marxists, that I 100% agree with that, because as we've discussed previously on iSpy, when we had interviewed the co-author of Disinformation, that was one of the things that the Disinformation campaign, as their goals, was to get these agents of disinformation into seminaries. And the media and everything else that you just named, as well as other elements of society. Academia, of course, was a big one, as was the theater and film and whatnot.
Well,
but as far as infiltrating seminaries, though, what was the goal, you think? Was the goal a spiritual goal or a secular goal? In other words, are they there to stop people from being saved, or was it merely to weaken the church in order to gain control of the government?
Well, I think on the surface, in the minds of these people who desire power over others that God doesn't grant them, tyranny, so forth, my opinion would be that they're very selfish in that. It's just, I want power. I think a more insidious conspiracy in that is that spiritual one of that spirit of Antichrist, who certainly wants to turn hearts of sinful man away from the only Savior that God sent to the world. So I think on one front, there's a very selfish aim of men in power and who desire to have that power, because the only thing that stands in the way of that is the church and Jesus Christ. And so in order to obtain their power, they have to take that down. On the other side, I do agree that you would have the devil, who wants nobody coming to his archenemy, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with you that they are effectively paving the way for the rise of the Antichrist. And let's go ahead and take a break there. There are some well-meaning Christians out there who do believe that the church should be very separate from the government and not be involved. We'll talk about why they're wrong after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We hear a lot about political activists, especially with politics now being a full-time 24/7 news cycle issue. Well, America needs evangelical activists. So we're talking today with Pastor Richard Peel about getting the church involved, and he is leading an effort with other pastors to do that. His home church is Victory Baptist. To find out more, visit victoryforyou.church. Yes, it is a website, .church, and that's F-O-R, not the number, victoryforyou.church, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So, Pastor, for those Christians out there who think that the church should not be involved politically, what's their excuse? Why do you think that they believe that as a general rule, so to speak?
Well, I hear frequently, and even when we dealt with everything related to COVID, Romans 13 coming up in that conversation quite often.
Yeah, and that's definitely been my experience as well. For the Christians that are out there who think that the church and Christians in particular should not be involved in politics, Romans 13, 1 through 7, and verses 1 and 2 say, quote, "Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. So right there, I mean, I can see how a lot of people would think, well, of course we're supposed to obey the government and we should be doing whatever it tells us to. But I mean, when you think about it, that runs contrary to so much of other Christian teaching, because if the government orders all the churches to close down, are you supposed to obey that?
That was the dilemma we had, that I had, I guess, as a pastor, that I had to get answered from the Bible. And again, after careful study, 4 or 5 days of just poring over the scriptures and sequestering myself into this place of study so I could come out with confident leadership, I determined that that God doesn't expect us to obey illegitimate authority, you might say.
Right.
And by that, I don't mean that a person who fills an office is illegitimate, nor do I... am I saying that the office itself is illegitimate? I'm saying that those powers that be, if you were to continue in that text, are reminded that they are ministers of God, that they're to represent his interests through their office, that they are to bear his sword of vengeance against evildoers while promoting and protecting doers of good. So when these civil authorities, these government agencies take the sword, if you will, and they turn it against the church itself, what is the church to do? Well, not obey. We are to bear that attitude of Acts 5 that we must obey God rather than man. And again, my position is, if the government commands me to do something God forbids or forbids me to do something God commands, that is where my obedience to that government stops. So it's not a matter of, being of a mindset of anarchy or no government is to be in place. It's reminding the government, really, the extent of their boundaries. You know, as I think about the Bible being put together historically from the beginning of time to where we are today, you really see these three basic institutions presented. The very first one is the family unit, and that's put before us in Genesis 2 and Genesis 3 and following. And really, the foundation of civil society is the family. And then later, at post-flood, Noah's flood in Genesis 9, you begin to see the introduction of government on a very small scale, and that government was to be a man governing themselves, not somebody over the top of them, but a society of people coming together to maintain righteousness. The specifics of Genesis 9 was simply God saying to Noah and his sons, the man who sheds blood, murders, he is to have his blood shed, be put to death as a act of justice for the crime of murder. And so you begin to see the formation of government there. It continues throughout the Old Testament. And then you come to the New Testament with the introduction of the church and really, We're told by the Apostle Paul in his epistle to Timothy that the church is the pillar and the ground of truth in the community. And I was at a meeting not long ago and said, really, the church's role is to teach the home how to function biblically so that society can be civil and orderly. And it's to remind the government of the confinements that God imposes upon them in relationship to their power. Their power isn't endless. They're to be under power, and they need to be reminded by pastors and other church members of the limits of their power. There is to be a good working relationship between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also really reflects God's desire for order here on this planet. You know, God is a God of order, not of chaos.
Absolutely.
You know, but when I read those first seven verses of Romans 13, I see it much in the same way as far as being in subjection to the government, kind of in the same way that the Bible talks about wives being submissive to their husbands. It doesn't mean that you're a doormat. It doesn't mean that you don't have any opinions. It doesn't mean that you don't have decision-making authority. And it certainly doesn't mean being silent if your spouse mistreats you.
Right.
Nor does it mean being silent if he's in the wrong. To me, it's much more about establishing this order to the world. And as you say, that's really consistent with so much of what the Bible teaches about society.
Yes. And that's written into our Constitution, our very First Amendment. You know, we bear these five enumerated rights, mm-hmm. one of those mm-hmm. being to redress grievance with the government.
That's right.
So if there's a grievance that the people of God have with something the government is doing, God forbid we should sit by on our hands being silent and disengaged.
Yeah. Yeah. And for people who think or maybe have some kind of mental roadblock against Christians getting involved or this notion that somehow you should always obey the government. Well, what if the government makes murder legal? It doesn't make it moral all of a sudden. Just makes it legal, but it's still immoral. So if the government did make murder legal, what are you supposed to do? Go out there and start killing people?
Right. And a great example of that is the Jews, when they're in Egyptian slavery, and the midwives were told the king to kill the males, and they clearly disobeyed the king of Egypt. And they lied to him about everything regarding the children that were being born. And if you follow that context out, God actually rewarded them for their disobedience to civil authority, the midwives, that is. And you can read that in Exodus 2 and Exodus 3.
That's right. We recognize the fact that the government has authority over us, but God has authority over government, and that's where our ultimate allegiance needs to be. All right, everyone, stay with us. We'll continue with Pastor Peel talking about getting the church involved. Stay with us. We're talking with Pastor Richard Peel about activating the church and getting Christians and churches involved in politics. Pastor Peel is leading an effort with other pastors to do that. His home church is Victory Baptist in Bend, Oregon. And, we were talking during the break there, communism really does need to take the church out of the way. I mean, if they're ever going to take over America, you've got to knock out that foundation and then the rest of the building will come tumbling down. And I have to say that we really saw the inherent authoritarianism during COVID. And we've kind of touched on this earlier, but it really surprised me to see that happen, because I was living under the illusion that we had lived in a free country with a government that was tasked with protecting our rights, because they don't give us rights. God does. And yet all it took was a disease with a 99.5% on average survival rate hyped up to 10 to the 10 million. And the government seized on that latent dormant laws under the guise of the greater good. The greater good, unfortunately, has been the excuse of every tyrant throughout modern history. So during COVID, as we had repeatedly pointed out, no society in the history of mankind ever obeyed its way to more freedom. So could you talk a little bit more about what you experienced during COVID, especially like any kind of interaction you had there with local law enforcement?
Yeah, when everything really cranked up there, I think it was March 17th, with the first order from our governor coming out to, stay at home as much as possible was it. And I began to interact with my sheriff, my local PD, wanting to know, I was trying to feel them out if they were going to come after us if we didn't obey. I already made up my mind that we weren't going to close down our services or go into the parking lot. We weren't going to, minimize our assembly to 25 people. We weren't going to abstain from singing. We were going to worship our God the way we do every week. And I encourage the congregation here that each person needs to do what's in their conscience to do. And if you're, not wanting to come out and expose yourself potentially to the disease, then stay home. And if you weigh your spiritual life more valuable than maybe your physical in some way, than to come. And our attendance didn't really change very much. And we just continued on. And, we didn't have any direct pushback. It was interesting that in Oregon that there seemed to be some restraint held from the church, whereas across our community, businesses, coffee shops, and other type of entities that did not comply, OSHA became the governor's weapon against them to impose fines for violating these health codes.
In terms of the authority to shut down churches, I mean, it says right there in the First Amendment, freedom of speech and freedom of religion. Should the government be allowed to shut down churches?
Absolutely not. And, I even came to the point in my own studies of a realization that the church doesn't belong even to man. It's the Lord's church. And as a pastor, I don't have the power to say we're going to stop having public services. That's not my call to make. I'm under the authority of Jesus Christ. And if he directs us for some reason somehow to shut down the church, then I guess we will do that. But otherwise, I didn't, and I told my congregation, I don't have the power to cancel church. I don't have the power to not be here. I don't have the authority, is what I mean by that, to not show up. So should a government have the right to tell people of faith when and how they can worship or where they worship or how many can worship together? Absolutely not. It's, again, clearly protected in our First Amendment to America's Constitution. Mm-hmm. It's reinforced in even clearer terms than the Oregon Constitution. And, you know, I was quite honestly appalled with the pastors across the state who just willy-nilly kowtowed to the governor's orders.
You know, that's funny. That's exactly what I was going to ask you, is that, you know, it really surprised me how authoritarian the state got, but also how many other people just jumped right on that. I mean, you had the mask Nazis there in the grocery store that yelled at people that weren't masking up, and we had people that were threatening to lock people into jail if they didn't take the vaccine. So what were some of the responses by other pastors as far as allowing your churches to be shut down and essentially giving the government control over those churches?
Most of my colleagues that I spoke to who did close down their churches pretty quickly, I guess I'd say within 3 or 4 weeks, realized that maybe we made a mistake and we shouldn't have closed our churches down, and they began to open up. But there were certainly some churches across the state that stayed shut down for, oh, better part of a year. Many of them didn't survive. They've just, you know, they've closed, they've shuttered their doors, and that church no longer exists. But, you know, my experience, I was in the military for 10 years. I bore a secret security clearance. I was involved in the intelligence gathering apparatus of the U.S. Navy during the Cold War. And so I suppose having that inside track of how our government operates, I was a little bit more suspicious maybe than your average pastor who doesn't have a background of in some way being a federal employee.
Okay, let's take a break a little bit early, because coming back we want to talk about how Christians should get involved and what should they be doing. We'll have more with Pastor Peel after this. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, and we've been talking today with Pastor Richard Peel, getting the church involved, and he is leading an effort with other pastors to do that. His home church is Victory Baptist. To find out more, head to victory4u.church, and that's F-O-R, not the number, victory4u.church, or you can visit them personally if you happen to be in Bend. And so in the time that we have left, you know, we had been talking there about COVID, and if you open the door as a pastor to letting the government decide whether or not you should be open, your church be open, what's next at that point? The government deciding what you can preach?
Well, there's seemingly some threat of that already in different states across our country, of wanting to control that and who can preach and whose license you have to bear in order to be recognized as a preacher, and on that might go. I suppose that the takeaway from that is you can't compromise your way out of tyranny.
That's right.
You have to resist. And I don't mean, you know, in some violent fashion. I mean peacefully resist. I would say non-compliant. Simply, we will not comply with orders that go beyond what God would allow you to give us.
Yeah. Well, in doing my research for the show this week, I came across this quote by Howard Zinn, who I'm not exactly sure who he is, but I do like what he has to say. He says, quote, "Historically, the most terrible things, war, genocide, and slavery, have resulted not from disobedience, but from obedience." And I think he's absolutely right on that. So we got to know you because you had been there at the Capitol to protest HB 2002. For those who don't know, why were you there protesting that bill, HB 2002? What's so terrible about that bill from a Christian standpoint?
Well, I would say that bill on its very core is an attack on the family. It's an attack against that foundational institution of all civil society, the family unit, that children are not the property of the state, that in all actuality, the Bible declares them to be God's, entrusted to families to bring up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, showing them the right way to live. And so to that bill, in essence, there's so much about it. We could spend an hour on that subject, but um, it, it for one legalizes, it removes, abortion is already legal, but it removes any age restrictions. Essentially, an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old could seek out an abortion if there was such a need. It would legalize the hiding of the aborted baby's body so that there could be no cross-state investigations if a person came from an outside state to Oregon for an abortion. Here, we could deny that an abortion ever happened. You know, the performer could, the body could be hidden. There'd be no way to investigate what took place in the life of a 10 or 12-year-old. And think about this, Mark. If you legalize that, what you're really doing is empowering, you know, the criminals who might impregnate a young girl and bring her across state lines to a place where it's legal to not only kill the baby, but hide the evidence. So you can go back to your home state with no evidence that you have, you know, raped or molested or harmed a juvenile.
Mm-hmm.
That's one side of it. The other side is, you know, allowing a 15-year-old to undergo gender-affirming treatment is their quote, which means everything from puberty blockers, which is, you know, basically chemical castration of males, right up to surgical procedures to mutilate the genitalia of our children. And again, if a parent tries to resist in that, it weaponizes the government against them, that they're now, you know, facing a Class A misdemeanor and 364 days in jail for merely protesting the state taking control of their child.
Yes, and that's the crazy thing within that. I mean, I think there's also a fine for medical providers if they refuse to perform gender reassignment surgeries and some of this other nonsense. But that's where you have really crossed the line to where the church has essentially removed itself or been removed from society. And now you've got a situation where the government is imposing its own morals and ethics onto people, and they will punish you if you don't. So in the time that we have left, what do you say to people who think that the church should be separate from society? And how do you persuade them that, yes, it's time to put on the armor of God, and not just spiritually speaking, but it's time to get out there and fight for what's right?
You know, it's there needs to be really a repentance. If there's a Christian mind out there who thinks I'm to blindly obey the government, I'm to sit on the sidelines, I would remind you that Jesus said that we're to be the salt of the earth, that we're to be the light of the world. And that doesn't mean certain corners of the earth and certain corners of the world. God's people that live their faith in every area of their lives, at work, at play, at home, at church, in the government. Being a citizen of these United States or this state of Oregon, they need to be fully engaged. I've been pressing folks in my circles to run for elected office. We need to bring God's righteous influence into government again. And you're not going to do that by trying to take legislators or government leaders who are non-believers and persuade them to become believers. You just need to get believers in office again. And so I believe that believers ought to be running for public office. I think they ought to be getting involved in their the grassroots, lowest ways, the lowest places, perhaps just to begin. But they need to engage. They need to be vocal. They need to communicate with their senator, their representatives. They need to know them. They need to have FaceTime with them, telephone calls with them, email them. Let your voice be heard. People need to know we're here.
Yep, absolutely. When you're trying to talk with other pastors about getting their churches involved, do you get pushback from them or some kind of resistance? And if they do give you some resistance on that, how do they think doing nothing will accomplish anything?
Well, I do get resistance from some. I'm not going to say all blanketly are there. Many, you know, I have some friends that are pastoring churches across our state that are where I'm at. I'm probably closer friends with several men in California that are very active in California as well. But as to how they think we're going to get something done with nothing, I think they fall back to prayer, which certainly I believe in prayer. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the end of the day, David had to throw a stone.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So real quick, say someone is in a church where the leadership has that mindset of Christians shouldn't be politically involved. What would you suggest to them as individuals as to how to get their church's leadership ignited and excited for political activism?
That's a tough one for somebody in the pew to do, but I would certainly say meet with your pastor, talk to your pastor, try to get things in his hands to maybe challenge his way of thinking. And ultimately, I've said this on other shows, that if you can't get your leadership, your church leadership, to be more active, I would suggest you find a church that will.
It's a good way to think about it, and would be a great thing to do as well. Pastor Peel, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been a great discussion.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
As I mentioned, this being Memorial Day weekend, we will be re-airing this show next week as well. Such an incredibly important topic. We really do want to get it out there to people who need to hear it. Some things you can be doing right now to be involved: sign those petitions we've talked about, stop the Oregon Department of Forestry's disastrous plan to abandon forests for 70 years. Do that at OregonStrongerTogether.com, OregonStrongerTogether.com, and give parents the option to take their kids out of failing schools and put them in schools that meet the educational needs of their child and family. Sign those petitions at educationfreedomfororegon.com. Woke teachers can't indoctrinate kids who aren't there. educationfreedomfororegon.com. And contact your senator and representative and tell them no on HB 2002. This bill, as we mentioned, will replace your family's morals and ethics and Christian guidance with the state of Oregon's state-sanctioned ethics. It will allow teachers and other state agents to interfere directly with parental rights so they can manipulate and mutilate your children. And by the way, longtime listeners of iSpy know this has been happening for years, ever since Kitzhaber's grand healthcare transformation. Because they changed the insurance rules from FERPA, where parents have the explicit right to be informed about everything the school did and said to children, and changed that to HIPAA, which treats kids as adults and strips parents of their rights, except the right, or at least the obligation, to pay for it. As we've said, you could literally put your daughter on the bus in the morning and have no clue what happened to her from that point on, nor have any right to know. They could take her off to Planned Parenthood or off to a mental health counselor, or have a school-based health center right there on the campus so she could access those without ever having to leave the school grounds. What HB 2002 does is codify into law the rules that have already been put in place, rules that you knew about if you've been listening to iSpy Radio. What is new is HB 2002 now gives the state the means to fine you if you don't comply, if you don't obey. And the excuse of "you're obeying God, not man" is no longer a valid argument. This is the world we live in. We've allowed it to happen because the church has been removed, willingly or unwillingly, from society. The effect is the same. It's time to change that. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The iSpy Radio Show.